I have a message from God in my heart concerning the sinfulness of the wicked. There is no fear of God before their eyes. In their own eyes they flatter themselves, too much to detect or hate their sins. The word of their mouths are wicked and deceitful. They fail to act wisely or do good. Even on their beds they plot evil. They commit themselves to a sinful course and do not reject what is wrong.
Your love, Lord, reaches to the heavens, your faithfulness to the skies. Your righteousness is like the highest mountains, your justice like the great deep. You, Lord, preserve both people and animals. How priceless is your unfailing love, O God! People take refuge in the shadow of your wings. They feast on the abundance of your house. You give them drink from your river of delights. For with you is the fountain of life. In your light, we see light.
Please be seated.
Good job.
Well, good morning, Redeemer. It's great to have you here with me this morning, with us this morning. It's great to have you here. If you are a visitor here today, we just want to say welcome. We're so glad you've chosen to spend some time with us here this morning. My name is Pastor Forrest. I'll be up after the service. I'll be up front. I'd love the chance to meet you. There's some incredibly great and fun things going on here at Redeemer right now. We've talked a little bit about with the family meetings, and we're transitioning from what we've been doing to a celebratory worship service. And so that transition is going to take a couple of months to do, and I just want to let you know a little bit about that process. Some of you know about the process, some of you have heard about the process, or you're aware of it, but some of you don't, so I just want to let you know. What we're doing right now is we're doing this celebratory worship experience. And what that means is that we're having people volunteer to visit one of the 100 fastest growing churches in America. And there's five churches that are kind of close to us. And so they're visiting through the month of September, visiting these other churches. At the end of September, then in our family meeting in October, October 5th, which is going to have a meal. So there's going to be a meal there. That's kind of why it's such a long meeting. Brian made it sound like I was going to talk for 2.5 hours. I'm not doing that. We're going to have a meal. If you're planning to attend, we'd like for you to sign up in the Welcome Center, or there's some opportunities in the bulletin for you to sign up online as well or by phone. So we're going to have that family meeting. We're going to have all these people that have visited these churches are going to talk about what they learned, what their experiences, what they liked, what they didn't like, and it's just going to be a fun time together. And then we're going to set up, during that meeting on October 5th, we're going to set up the celebratory worship encounter. Yeah, they're both E's, and that's hard to keep track of. So experience is now, encounter is coming. And in the encounter, what we're going to do is we're bringing in four different worship directors or pastors who are going to do four different services through the end of October for us here, and they're going to lead us in worship doing four different worship styles. Some of them will be very familiar to you. Some of them will be maybe a little different to you, but we're all going to get a chance to experience that in the encounter. And then in the beginning of November, we are going to meet everyone. So this is not just a members thing. If you're a first-time attender or you've been attending for a while, everyone is welcome. The family meeting, we're all going to get together and we're going to talk about what do we believe and what are we convinced is the right way forward for us to go in terms of what worship style we should choose to reach this community with the good news. So we're going to talk about it. You guys are going to decide, kind of an unofficial, official decision. And from there, we're going to then have one more family meeting in the month of December, and that's going to be our Christmas party. And I'm already looking forward to the Christmas party. Like, there's some things that we're going to do that nobody knows about except for Carly, and it's going to be awesome. So at any rate, it's going to be super fun. So put that on your calendar, because we are going to have a Christmas party in December. which will be twofold. One is to celebrate being together as a church and as a family and just celebrate Christmas and the wonderful time of year that it is. But then we're also going to celebrate the direction that we feel like the Lord is leading us in our worship. And we're going to talk about what that looks like and how we go forward. So it's going to be a wonderful time. So that's what's going on at Redeemer. There's a lot of other things. The women have a Bible study begins this week. Just a lot of great things that are going on here at Redeemer. But the worship, the celebratory worship transition is kind of a big one right now. And so it's been there's a lot of great things that are going on here at Redeemer. This morning, I want to share with you, I'm looking forward to sharing with you what I've been studying over the past week. And this is another one of those weeks where what I've been studying is super critical. We're going to talk a little bit about humanity's sin. We're going to talk a little bit about some things that are pretty contentious issues in our culture right now. But I'm going to frame it in a way where we're going to keep our eyes on really what the Apostle Paul was trying to communicate when he communicated this in the book of Romans. But it's going to be a little bit of a trick because we're covering a lot of verses, I don't have a lot of time, and it's a contentious issue. So what could go wrong, right? I'm really looking forward to it. It's a challenge, but I'm ready for it. We tend to have a benign diagnosis of humanity's sin. We tend to be people who look at humanity's sin and we say, not that big of a deal. This past week, there was a news article that was put out about an Iowa teen who was sentenced for her murder of a man. She got parole. She was given probation. She was fined $150,000 that she needed to pay to this man's family because in her story, she claimed that the man raped her. And so her sentence was that she had to pay this money and she had to be on probation. And I know when I first read this story, I, like many of you would have been if you read the story or if you've read similar stories, you kind of want to put this into like a little box in your head. She's the innocent victim. He was the guilty party and probably deserved to die. We want to put them in those little boxes, put them in our head, and move on with our life. Because we tend to have a very benign evaluation about humanity's sins. But as I read this story, it wasn't quite so simple. It actually got really, really messy. And in the end of it, the judge kind of said, you're getting an opportunity here to go on with your life. I'm not sure that that's the best thing for you, but that's what we're going to do. And it was a very messy story. And I think one of the things that's important for us to keep in mind, important for us to maybe keep at the forefront of our mind, or even we're going to deal with here this morning, is that humanity's sin is not benign. It's not. Sin has some characteristics to it that are not a big deal. And the question that I want to pose to you this morning is, what really is sin? What is sin? If we could take sin and put it into the laboratory and dissect it, what would we learn? If we could take sin and put it under a microscope and look at it and say, okay, what is sin? What would we learn about sin? What really is sin? This morning, what we're going to do is we're going to return in our series in the book of Romans. So if you have your Bibles, turn with me to Romans chapter 1. And what we're going to look at is we're going to answer this question, what really is sin? And so 2 weeks ago, we talked about how what our motivation should be to share the good news with the people around us. And then last week, we talked about how important it is to have faith in the good news, more than just when a person becomes a Christian, but they should have faith in the good news all throughout their life. And this morning, we're going to look at what really is sin. I mean, Romans chapter 1, we're going to be going through verses 18 to 32. And what you're going to see this morning is that humanity's sin is suppressing the truth. Humanity's sin is skipping the truth, and then humanity's sin is snubbing the truth. And at the very end, I'm going to have a challenge for you that will admittedly be the most laborious challenge that I've given you, and I know that going into it, so I'm going to break it up into little pieces to make it a little bit easier for you to do, but I'm going to challenge you to do something that, as I've thought through this, I'm convinced that if you actually follow this challenge, it will change your perspective on every single person you see going forward. With that being said, let's look at Romans chapter 1, verses 18 to 32. The first thing we see is that humanity's sin is suppressing the truth. Verse 18 starts off this way, "But God shows his anger from heaven against all sinful, wicked people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. They know the truth about God because he has made it obvious to them. Forever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and sky through everything God made. They can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature. So they have no excuse for not knowing God." Verse 21, "Yes, they knew God, but they wouldn't worship him as God or even give him thanks. And they began to think up foolish ideas of what God was like. And as a result, their minds became dark and confused. Claiming to be wise, they instead became utter fools." Verse 23. "And instead of worshiping the glorious, ever-living God, they worshiped idols made to look like mere people and birds and animals and reptiles." This passage begins where it says, "But God shows his anger from heaven." And it's an interesting way for this depiction to be for God to be characterized, because in this Greco-Roman time period, in Greco-Roman literature, the gods, the pantheon of gods, was very impersonal. They were depicted as very impersonal gods. They were powerful. They had their own agendas, but they were very impersonal. They didn't really care about humans. There was no interaction with humans. Humans were insignificant to them. But if the humans kind of messed things up enough, then the gods would decide it was time to do something, and they would pour out their wrath on humanity. And the depiction here of God is very different. It's striking. It's probably a little more striking in their day than it would be to us, but it's very personal. It says, "But God shows his anger from heaven against all sinful and wicked people." You get the sense here in which God is taking it personal, that these people are doing these wicked and sinful things. He's taking it personal, like he's personally responding to what's going on. And the depiction here is that God is a very personal God. He's a real God. He has a personality. He has an identity. He is a God that functions. It says, "But God showed his anger from heaven against all sinful, wicked people." These are their characteristics. This is what their DNA is, or this is what they're made up of. This is what their lifestyle is. They're sinful. They're wicked people. And it goes on to say that they suppress the truth by their wickedness. And the idea behind the suppression here is it's an active thing that they're doing. They're actually pushing down the truth. They're suppressing it. It's not that they're doing some activity and, by the way, it happens to suppress. That's not what it's saying. It's saying they're actually physically pushing down the truth, and they're pushing it down because of their wickedness. And oftentimes when we hear that wickedness, we think, well, they're just wicked in their relationship to God, which is true. But that's not the word that's used here. It's their wickedness is in terms of their relationship to the people around them. Their wicked behavior towards other people is causing them to push down the truth. And this is what God sees, and God's upset about this. He says, you're pushing down the truth by how you treat the people around you. Verse 19, it says, "They know the truth about God." Speaking of these people who are sinful and wicked, "they know the truth about God because he has made it obvious to them. For ever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and the sky Through everything God made, they can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power, and divine nature. And so they have no excuse for not knowing God. And so the description here is that these people are suppressing, they're physically, they're actually doing something to suppress the truth. And they're doing that knowing full well that they have had opportunity in their life to see that God is real. Just by looking at the way that things are created, by looking up in the heavens, by looking at the world around them, it's clear to them, at least at one point in their life, that God was real. Now, if you know many people, you know that there's a lot of people who say God's not real. And so this seems like a contradiction, but if you understand what's really being said here, he's going to go on and say some people suppress the truth, but his point is that at some point in time, everybody knew that God was real. Because all they got to do is look up around them and see that somebody had to have made this. And I think that let's keep going. Verse 21 says, yes, they knew God, but they wouldn't worship him as God or even give him thanks. So they knew who God was. They knew that there had to be a God, but they refused to worship him. And they began to think up foolish ideas of what God was like. As a result, their minds became dark and confused. And it's important to understand here that what's happening is that they're knowing that there's something that's true, what these people are doing. They know that there's something that's true, but they're refusing to acknowledge it as truth. And so what's happening is they're believing something that they know isn't true, and it's causing their mind to become darkened. This is not God's doing. This is what they're doing to themselves. As a result, their minds become dark and confused. Claiming to be wise, they instead became utter fools. And instead of worshiping the glorious, ever-living God, they worshiped idols made to look like mere people and birds and animals and reptiles. And the picture here is intentional. It's intentionally depicting what's going on. These people are denying, these people are abandoning, worshiping the supreme, all-powerful, personal God, and instead they're choosing to worship. They're not choosing to worship animals and reptiles and other people. They're choosing to worship images of animals, reptiles, and people. And the point here is that they've given up something that was real and true and powerful. And they're choosing, because they don't want to worship this God, they're choosing to worship not even other things. They're choosing to worship things that look like things. And the picture is so stark. It's trying to demonstrate how foolish that is. And again, the point that Paul is making here is he's trying to say is that humanity's sin is suppressing the truth. Suppression is a lot of work. Anytime you have to suppress something, it's a lot of work. A number of years ago, I was burning some yard waste in our yard. Not here in Dallas. It was when we lived in Kansas, and it was okay to do this. And so there was a big pile of, you know, leaves and all that kind of stuff sitting in my yard, and I was burning it. And I didn't really realize, but a lot of the stuff had a little more moisture in it than I thought it would, so it didn't go up in flames. It was just kind of smoldering. And I did it for an hour or two, and I'm like, this is dumb. I don't want to keep doing this. So I got my hose out, and I doused it with water. I mean, just completely doused it with water. And I'm going to just leave it in a compost pile and let it decompose on its own. So come back another hour, a couple hours later, doggone it, that thing is smoking again. I didn't suppress it enough. So I said, all right, I'll fix it. Got the hose back out again, and this time I completely doused it. It looked like a puddle of debris. I doused it completely. I thought, we're good. That night, started smoking again. Because it's so much work to suppress something. It's very difficult. And in the same way, I want you to begin to understand that when humanity suppresses the truth about God, it's a lot of work. Because every time that they go outside and they see the stars, every time that they go out and they see an animal, or they see a nature video, or they see an ocean, every time they go outside, there's a little part of them that's saying, am I sure that this just happened on its own? Kind of looks like there might have been somebody behind it. And in order to suppress that, they have to continually suppress it. Suppression is a lot of work. And the reason that I'm telling you that, and the reason that I'm phrasing it that way, is because I'm wanting to begin to get you to open your eyes to the fact that when humanity sins, in order for them to keep going the way that they're going, it's a lot of work. Suppressing the truth that you see all around you is a lot of work. And the reason that that's important for us is because as a person continues to suppress that, they are continually met with the reality that they may not be right. So here's what I challenge, this impossible challenge that I've got for you. If you have your sermon outline notes there, there's a list for you to put the five people on the naughty list. And here's what I want you to do, is I want to challenge you to write the name of five people who you know are on the naughty list. Okay? Now here's what I mean by that. I want you to write the name of five people that you know. These need to be people that you actually know, that you can converse with, that you're not somebody that you want to know on TV, but somebody that you personally know. And then I want them to be people that you actually know are for sure on the naughty list. Now, hopefully these aren't people that are believers. They aren't people that call themselves Christians. But it's important for you to begin to... The reason that it's important for you to list these five people is this, is that when we talk about humanity's sins, we talk about humanity suppressing the truth, I want to begin to get your attention to see that those people, that humanity, has a name and has a face. And there are people who are holding to those positions that God's not real and that God's not anything that should be worshipped. There are people that are holding that, but those are real people. They have moms and dads. They have sons and daughters. They drive cars. They're real people. So write down the name of five people who you know are on the naughty list. Now, don't do this in a judgmental way. That's not the spirit of this. Most people who are on the naughty list are happy to be on the naughty list, and they want everybody to know they're on the naughty list, okay, because of the way that they're living their life. So just write down the name of five people who you know are on the naughty list. You know them, and you know they are on the naughty list. What we're seeing here is we're answering the question, humanity's sin, what really is sin? And we're seeing that humanity's sin is suppressing the truth. That's what humanity is doing. They are pushing down the truth by their wicked behavior. But then as we go into the next section, we're going to see that humanity's sin is skipping the truth. Look with me at verse 24. So God abandoned them. These are the wicked, sinful people. So God abandoned them to do whatever shameful things their hearts desired. As a result, they did vile and degrading things with each other's bodies. They traded the truth about God for a lie. So they worshiped and served the things God created instead of the Creator Himself, who is worthy of eternal praise. Amen. That is why God abandoned them to their shameful desires. Even the women turned against the natural way to have sex and instead indulged in sex with each other. And the men, instead of having normal sexual relations with women, burned with lust for each other. Men did shameful things with other men, and as a result of this sin, they suffered within themselves the penalty they deserved. Verse 24 starts off, so God abandoned them to do whatever their shameful desires were, whatever their shameful hearts desired. And it's important to understand, especially how this is characterized today, that God is not judging humanity for these sins. God is abandoning them to do what they want to do. God is looking at the situation, and these people want to do shameful things. And often what happens is God stands in the way and says, it's what you want to do, but you shouldn't do that. It's not good for you, so he prevents it. But what he's saying here is he's pulling that out. He's pulling his involvement out, and he's saying, this is what you want to do, and I'm going to let you do it. I'm not going to prevent you from doing it. God is not the axe here, axing him. He's not judging him here. He's not judging him for what they're doing. He's just saying, I'm not going to prevent you from doing what you want to do. And though it seems a little bit vindictive maybe or mean, it's not. I still think there's a redemptive aspect to why God is doing that, which we'll talk about in a bit. He says, so God abandoned them to do whatever shameful things their hearts desired. So whatever they wanted to do, they're doing it. And as a result, they did vile and degrading things with each other's body. Verse 25 said, they traded the truth about God for a lie. They had the truth that God was real and that God actually gave them within the confines of a covenant marriage, sexual relationships. He gave that to them. They didn't want that. They weren't satisfied with that. They didn't want that. So they said, we want something different, and said, okay, go ahead and have it. And what happened is they traded what was good and natural for something that was not good and not natural. They traded. They skipped over the truth. They traded the truth about God for a lie. So they worshiped and served the things God created instead of the Creator himself, who is worthy of eternal praise. Hearkening back to what he's already said, they're worshiping the creation, the lesser valuable thing, and they're not worshiping the thing that's truly God. And as they traded the truth of God for a lie, verse 26, that is why God abandoned them to their shameful desires. So again, it's not that God is pushing them to do this or God is even happy about them doing it. This is your desire, and for whatever reason he's choosing, I'm not going to prevent you from doing it. Go ahead and do that. And they did it, and they did shameful things with each other. And it's there's a lot made of what this shameful thing, women having sexual relationships with women and men having sexual relationship with other men, and that's a very hot topic in our culture today. But I want you to just keep in mind that what they're doing behind this is they're abandoning the natural good gift that God gave them and say, I'm choosing the lie. That's the thing. It's not such a big deal what they're doing, but that they're abandoning God and knowledge of God. And the end of it, the end of that section there, it says, men did shameful things with other men, and as a result of this sin, they suffered within themselves the penalty they deserved. And again, that sounds a little bit vindictive to our ears, but that's not the tone here. The tone is not that God is giving them some kind of punishment. When I was a teenager and when I was going to college, everyone said that this was talking about AIDS. You know, this was God's judgment on the people. That's totally taking out of context what this is talking about. In context, God is removing himself from preventing them, and they're doing what their shameful things that they wanted to do. And what they're doing is darkening their own perspective. They're darkening their own minds. God is not sending AIDS to harm these people. These people are choosing to give up the truth to pursue a lie. And when they do that, it darkens their own perspective. There's a truth about when we trade down for something. Have you ever traded down for something? Like I've traded down for, we recently traded down for something. And there's a truth about when you trade down for something. When you trade down for something, you are constantly reminded that you traded down. We live in an apartment complex on the campus of Dallas Theological Seminary, and periodically people will put on the email board that they're getting rid of furniture. And this one person was giving away leather living room furniture. And we've had leather living room furniture before in the past. It was very nice. And we thought we might want some now. And the pictures looked good. And so we said, we'll take it. So I called up my son and I said, hey, we're going to pick up this furniture. Do you want our old IKEA couch? He's like, sure. Because they're moving down here. They needed a couch. So I said, okay, great. So we made this arrangement. Everything's set. So we go up and see the furniture. Well, it looked really comfortable in the pictures. Trust me. But when we sat on it, not so comfortable. And in the lighting, it kind of looked like that cool brown leather couch. But in reality, it was that not so cool eggplant purple. If you have eggplant, I'm sorry, but it just doesn't look right in my house. So every time I see this couch that's in my living room, it's uncomfortable to sit on, and I really don't like the color. And I traded down. It's hard to think that trading an IKEA couch is trading down, but it was, because the IKEA couch was super comfortable. So the idea was is that every time I see this couch, every time I see this love seat, I'm reminded that I traded down. And in a similar way, when humanity continues to settle for something that isn't true, even though they're trying to convince themselves that it's right, even though they're trying to say, this is the right way, this is the good way, this is the way that things should be, the more they tell themselves, there's still a sense in their mind that they have given up, they've traded down, they've traded the truth of God for a lie. And so as you return to your list of five people, I've given you some time now, so you should have that all filled out with five people. Okay, and on that list, you've got five people, and here's what I want you to do. I want you to circle the one who is most likely to be honest with you. I want you to circle the one who is most likely to be honest with you. Now, I've met some pretty sinful people, and there's a lot of people who are bound and determined to convince the world that their lifestyle is the way to go. Don't circle one of those people. Circle the person who you know will be honest with you and will really tell you what's going on in their life. Who on that list of the five people that are on the naughty list, which of those five is the most likely to be honest with you about how things really are? And just circle it right now. All I want you to do is circle it. Okay? So you listed the five people. Now I'm asking you to circle one. Okay? Circle one of the five people on your naughty list, the one who's most likely to be honest with you. So I've posed the question, what really is sin? And we've seen that humanity's sin is suppressing the truth. Humanity's sin is skipping the truth. And the last thing that we're going to see here is that humanity's sin is... what is it? Snubbing the truth. Thanks, good. I knew there was going to be a time where I'd forget one. Sorry. Snubbing the truth. How'd you forget snubbing? That one's such an awesome one. Okay. So humanity's sin is snubbing the truth. Look with me at verse 28. Since they thought it foolish to acknowledge God, he abandoned them to their foolish thinking and let them do things that should never be done. Their lives became full of every kind of wickedness, sin, greed, hate, envy, murder, quarreling, deception, malicious behavior and gossip. They're backstabbers, haters of God, insolent, proud, and boastful. They invent new ways of sinning and they disobey their parents. They refuse to understand. They break their promises. They're heartless. They have no mercy. They know God's justice requires that those who do these things deserve to die, yet they do them anyway. Worse yet, they encourage others to do them too. Humanity's sin is snubbing the truth. And verse 28 says, since they thought it foolish to acknowledge God, these people have come to the place in their life where they're like, I know there's probably a pretty good chance that God is real or see a lot of stuff, but I don't want to worship him. I don't want to follow him. So I'm going to trade out that truth and I'm going to go for the lie. And so since they thought it foolish to acknowledge God, he abandoned them. Again, he just let them do what they wanted to do to their foolish thinking and let them do things that should never be done. Now, this is the part we often miss. If you look at these things, these are not things towards God. These are things towards other people. Their lives became full of every kind of wickedness, sin, greed. Can't be greedy unless you're taking advantage of somebody else. Hate. They're hating other people, expressing that hate. They're envious of other people. They're murdering other people. They're quarreling with other people. They're deceiving other people. Their malicious behavior and gossip. They are backstabbers. As you go through this whole list, the whole thing is that their conduct is demonstrating that they're willing to hurt other people. And the picture here that I want you to see is that this was not God's plan. This is not what God wants. He's looking at these people and says, okay, fine, you're denying that I exist, but don't hurt other people. But in order for them to learn that abandoning God is not right, he pulled out of the way and he let them do what they wanted to do, and what they wanted to do was take advantage of other people. Verse 31, they refuse to understand, they break their promises, they're heartless and have no mercy. They know, in the bottom of their soul, they know God's justice requires that those who do these things deserve to die. Yet, they do them anyway. They're snubbing the truth. They know that it's wrong to murder someone, but they're doing it anyways. They know that it's wrong to be greedy and steal from other people, but they're doing it anyways. Worse yet, they encourage others to do them too. They're snubbing the truth. They know, in a sense, they know that there has to be some truth, but they don't want to believe it. And so they're doing things that they know that they shouldn't do, and they know that if they do those things, they deserve to die, and they're doing them anyways. And it goes on to say, not only are they doing them, but then they're encouraging other people to do them as well. And what's happening here many times is people are on a path, and they just can't figure out a way to get off. When I was a student at Moody, which was some 30 years ago now, man, I'm getting old, there was a fellow student there who said that Yugo cars were the best cars in America. Does anybody know what a Yugo car is? I mean, has anyone got that? Okay, it's an old car. I get it. I understand. But Yugo cars were, I mean, they had one redeeming quality. They were cheap, okay? They were inexpensive. They were made inexpensively, they were designed inexpensively, they were sold inexpensively. There wasn't much to them. They were just a little bitty car, and they were just cheap. So the student was like dead serious that Yugos were the best cars in America. Like, he was dead serious. And we were all listening to him, and like, we thought, clearly we misunderstood what he was saying. I mean, clearly. Like, that didn't make any sense. So we're like questioning, like, Yugo? Like, Yugos are the best car in America? We were just questioning it. And so instead of saying, ooh, I misspoke, or something like that, he dug in. And he said, not telling a lie here. He said, if I had my choice between a Yugo and a Ferrari, I would take the Yugo. Okay, if you didn't know the time period, you could buy like 20 Yugos for the price of a Ferrari. I mean, it was laughable. And as I heard him say this, I was like, are you serious? How could you even think to say something like that? But then I paused, and I realized what had happened. He made this pronouncement, and he got stuck. And he couldn't find a way off. He couldn't find a way out of saying this. And so instead of just saying, I was wrong, I misspoke, or boy, that was a dumb thing to say, or something, he just kept saying it more and more and more and more. And in a similar way, that's what's going on with a lot of people in humanity's place. They've lived their life up to this point snubbing God, saying God couldn't exist. And they have these little things that happen to them all throughout their life, and they're like, I may not be right here, but they can't find an exit. They can't find an off-ramp. And so instead of just stopping and saying, wow, I've lived my life completely wrong up to this point, they keep going and they dig their heels in. And the reason that I'm telling you this way, and the reason that I'm characterizing it this way, is I'm trying to build within you a sense of compassion for people in humanity who are legitimately trapped in their own choice to reject God. Those people have names. The people have faces. They have lives. And they may be digging their heels in even harder, trying to say that this is really true, or I really believe this. They may be doing that. But I want you to have just a bit of compassion for them. So here's the thing. You've got this list, five people, not in a judgmental way, just five people you know, if Santa was real. I think we're okay here saying Santa's not real. Okay, I think we're good. I just want to make sure there was no kids here. So I think Santa's probably not real, okay? But if Santa was real, let's say Santa did have a nice list and a naughty list, these five people would be on it. List these five people. And I ask you to circle one. Circle one you think that is going to be the most likely to be honest with you. And then my challenge for you is this, is I want to challenge you this next week to have a conversation with them. Take them out to coffee. Take them out to dinner, go over to their house, have them come over to your house, just talk to them. No agenda. Just say, tell me what's going on in your life. Just tell me what's going on. How's your family? How's your job? How's your whatever? Just talk to them about their life and just listen. Listen to what they have to say. There's two reasons I want you to do this. One is because I want you to see that people who are caught in this mindset and this rejection of God, they're just real people. They're real people. But second, I want you to see that if they're really honest with you, they're probably going to tell you that things aren't going quite as good as maybe they let off. And I'm hoping that if you have some time to spend with them, you'll begin to see the effects that they know on a daily basis of what it's really like to reject God. So the question I posed at the very beginning here is, what is sin really like? And so as we've walked through, we said that humanity's sin is sequestering or suppressing the truth, or pushing the truth down. They're intentionally doing it. Then we say that humanity's sin is skipping the truth. They're skipping over the truth. They're trading out truth for a lie. That's what they're doing. And then we saw that humanity's sin is snubbing the truth. In many ways, they know what the right thing is to do, and they know that doing the wrong thing is not the right thing to do, but they don't care. They're going to do it anyways. As I poured into this story of this Iowa teen, it broke my heart a bit. Really a tough situation all the way around. This Iowa teen was probably most likely raped by this guy. Probably was. But she's in a bad spot right now. She's in a really bad spot right now. Because of the way that the laws are in Iowa, and because of the way that she pled, the judge told her this. You have, your sentence is going to be 5 years of close supervised probation. The way to keep her out of jail was to put her on probation instead of go to jail. But what he ended up having to do was her sentence is deferred. Meaning that if during the 5 years of probation, if she breaks her probation, she will spend the 20 years in jail or potentially could spend the 20 years in jail. And the reason that her situation was so crazy and so difficult is because there were a lot of other things going on at the time. The man that she killed was asleep, and she stabbed him 30 times with his knife. It was messy. It's a messy, messy story. And as I heard what the judge said about what her sentence was going to be, 5 years in probation, he told her this. He said, "You've already been in juvenile detention, and you've already demonstrated that you have a complete disregard for rules that you don't like." And he said, "Over the next 5 years, you are going to be in close supervision, and you are going to have many, many rules that you are not going to like." And then he closed with this, and he said, "You asked me for a second chance, and I'm giving you one. But if you blow this, you won't get a third." And I thought about that situation, and I thought about that girl, and I said, she's already been in juvenile detention, and she can't follow the rules. And now she has, for the next 5 years, she has to be in close supervision and not break any of the rules. If she does, she's going to jail. And I'm like, this is hopeless. The chances of her making it 5 years because of the way that she's already lived, slim. Slim. She's probably going to end up in jail. Unless somewhere up in Iowa, a bunch of believers get around her, share with her the good news, and love on her and help her. It's going to be messy. It's going to be difficult. She's probably not going to be an easy person to love, and she's not going to be an easy person to help. But likely the only way that she is going to have a chance is if she has an opportunity for the good news to change her life. And I think that that's an I want you to see that picture, and I want you to see that humanity's sins are an affront to God. There's no doubt about it. But many of them are trapped in their own bad decisions, and they're headed for a very bad life and a very bad afterlife, unless they meet a bunch of believers who love them and are willing to get their own selves messy, and they're willing to get their own selves involved with someone who's going to be difficult to love. So I presented a challenge for you. I asked you to write those five names down. I asked you to circle one. And the next thing, the thing I'm really challenging you with, is take that person out to coffee and just listen to them. Listen to their story. Listen to who they are. Listen to what's going on in their life. Listen to them and realize that humanity's sin is a prison. And realize what it's like to be in that prison. There's a very good possibility that you may be here this morning, and you might be, as I did that list of the five people, you were like, yep, not a problem. First one on the list, it's me. You might be here this morning as you put that list together. The first person on the list you know is you. You are the most sinful person you know, and you know that you are as far away from God as you can possibly be. And I just want to invite you to, after the service, come up front and talk to me. I'd like to take you out to coffee. I'd really like to take you out to coffee and talk to you. For the rest of us in here, you've got a challenge this week. One person, take them out to coffee and just listen. I knew the preacher was going to be long-winded today, which means that we're probably not going to have time for communion. I'm sorry. I'll make it up to you next week. But I'm going to ask the worship team to come up now and close us out in prayer. Close us out with the worship song.
I invite you to stand as we sing of God's amazing grace, this hymn from all ages, Amazing Grace, number 502.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I am found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fear to relieve. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me thus far, and grace will lead me home. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun.
Now all glory to God, who is able, through his mighty power at work within us, to accomplish infinitely more than all we might ask or think. Glory to him in the church and in Christ Jesus through all generations, forever and ever. Amen. Have a good week.
No, you're good.